Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mon.
And... Welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast.
Are you a good whistler? It's pretty good. It's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do better.
No, we're not going to.
We're not going to have a Star Wars whistle off right now.
That's not what's happening on this episode. Welcome to the Masters of Modern podcast. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, with my co-host Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody?
So, if you didn't know, we saw The Last Jedi last night. We will not spoil or talk about it until maybe after the spoiler point of the episode. So this week's episode. It's been a year. Another year of this podcast.
Another year in modern. Another year
20,
of the show.
2018.
Have we been on Collected Duck Company for a year?
More than that, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah, Lord, more than that.
Happens. It all just happens so fast. Yeah, going back to the beginning. We started out 2016 with, oh, wow, look at this. Our first episode in 2017 was previewing Fatal Push.
Oh, yeah.
That was a cool spoiler.
I mean, our first episode for 2018 is going to be previewing our preview cards for
card.
Rivals of Ixalan. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a sweet card.
Yeah.
We've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing more to be said about that right now.
Can't. Not legally. There are lawyer ninjas, and they literally use the words lawyer ninjas that will hunt us down. But
I'll
we
like
do have a preview card on January 2nd.
And you guys
get
will
ready.
Like it. It's
and you'll
cool.
like it. Yep. Yeah. But today's episode is going to actually just be about a year. We're going to talk about this year. We're going to talk about the recent GP results over... in Oklahoma City that happened this last weekend that were really cool, really exciting. Top 8 was really interesting. And then we're going to talk a little bit about what we would play at the team GP. I am actually not going to be able to make it. Ben is going to try, but
I might. Our buddy Eric Wydatz, who created the Highlander Roulette format you guys have heard us talk about before, he and I have been talking. He might play Legacy. I might play Modern. We might open it up then to a third person.
For Standard?
Yeah, we're unsure. It's just hard. It's difficult when you have to deal with other formats that aren't Modern. It's just hard for us to go to tournaments, period. I feel like there's a good chance that like that tournament's going to happen, and then like the next week I'm going to have to fly somewhere for work, probably.
Right.
Or, like,
well, and something we will do is this episode, Michael Grothy, who is works for Kesko and was the lead developer for Super Party Battle, the game that we released this year, is going to come on because he is actually playing in the tournament and is playing the Modern portion. So we're going to discuss, based on the Oklahoma City results, what decks we think are good choices for that tournament, and he'll help discuss that because he's actually going through that decision process as we speak. But before we get into all of the GP goodness, why don't we discuss a little bit of how this year went and like what are some of our favorite moments and our favorite episodes and kind of do a little bit of a download because this, I believe, is going to be the last episode of 2017.
Yeah, I don't think Action Movie Night, we just did the exact same thing. We just signed off for 2 weeks. And I think it's that same. It's weird. It's weird to take 2 weeks off. It's weird to do a podcast for literally hundreds of weeks. And then when you don't have it in your life for a week, it really feels like, even though we don't get to talk to you guys who listen to this, we don't actually get to have a conversation with you. I think there's just a sense of audience and community in the show that feels like we're talking to you guys. So when we don't talk to you for 2 weeks, it feels like we've really missed some stuff. Maybe I get to feel a little more connected these days because of 10 Minutes of Modern. Speaking of which, we have shout-outs to do, actually.
Oh, we do. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm at Kess Wiley.
I'm Ben Bateman Media.
We are at the MM Cast. You should also make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone. I mean, at this point, all of you should have heard about them. They're awesome. They do great Commander every
They're
week.
Great.
They do an awesome show called Game Nights. They're just, you know, the best. And Jimmy and Josh do a really good job. And make sure to go to thinkgeek.com to buy Super Party Battle. It's the party game version of Magic that we came out with that you can buy there. It's really sweet. You're like on a college campus throwing the best party, fighting other students, kicking them out of other parties.
You can go buy that game right now.
Yeah. Make sure to check out the Facebook community group. We're at 2,700 people.
Yeah, it's like pretty wild.
We're almost at 2,800. By the time this episode comes out, we might be at 2,800 people. We opened that in like
like 4 or 5 months ago.
We're getting 500 people added every month. So yeah. it's becoming more of a just a great place to discuss modern.
We do,
Hagen Kirk does a really good job moderating with us to make sure that everyone keeps it friendly, keeps it open, and makes it about what are cool things you can do in modern and kind of discovering how to do different cool, fun things in the format.
Yeah, we've been using it. It's been fun to just be able to sort of pay attention to the modern conversation, but then we've also been using it to source ideas. So, for instance, now 2 weeks in a row, I've done something on 10 Minutes of Modern, which is that's the anchor station. A lot of you guys know about it now. It's basically like Twitter meets podcasting, but it's short form, 5 to 10 minutes a day of just modern content here from us. And I've been doing a thing now for the last couple weeks where I come up with the top four, like four underplayed somethings. And so last week it was four underplayed counterspells, and I put a little post up in the Facebook group with a picture so you guys can kind of see the cards I'm talking about, and then I record for 5 minutes about those four. And I did it again last night with four underplayed one drops. And so I think I'll be probably doing more of that, where I'm trying to link the content from Anchor with a visual so that if you don't want to have to listen to it, you can at least, start a discussion thread. And it's cool because we have thousands of people now that are part of those conversations. So you guys, I'm sure, those of you that listen to the station, have seen the parallels between the topics that show up on Anchor, show up on the Facebook page, and then ultimately we'll make it to the podcast for full episodes, because that's where I think we get a lot of our information now, is that group.
Yeah. And last but not least, make sure to check out 10 Minutes of Modern on the Anchor station. Do you just do that?
For like 2 minutes solid.
Oh, I thought, okay.
You just like fully zoned out. Yeah. That was very impressive.
I'm looking up Grand Prix results for 2018, all right?
That was unbelievable. You even, are you putting your hand up like you're a Jedi now for me to stop talking?
You
will
happen.
Stop talking. All right. Well,
didn't happen. All right, so this year has been pretty great. This year has been long. I can't believe that movies like Get Out and Lego Batman and Logan came out in the same year as the one that we are currently in. They came out last year.
Never saw Lego Batman.
Really?
Yeah.
You should watch it. Your last name's Batman.
Never saw the Lego movie.
You should also watch that. It's really good.
Yeah, that's what people say. I tried to watch the Lego movie once. I wasn't that interested. I don't know why. I don't really like animated very much. Do you know that?
I that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'd like struggle to get into those movies. Not because they're not good, I just struggle, you know.
We're all collectively judging you. But so what would you say? We start. I think Fatal Push is definitely one of the high points. I think Modern Masters 2017 also came out this year, which is crazy that was this year.
Feels
GP
like the
Vegas
least,
was this year.
Feels like Modern Masters 2017 was the least hyped of those sets.
Cool, because because it's not the third one.
Yeah.
B, we are now getting two master sets a year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a little, we talked about this on the price episode a lot, but I do think that this year was a little heavy on the master sets.
Yeah, I think we want less.
Yeah, I mean, Iconic, Eternal, the one we just talked about, Modern
Masters.
Well,
this year we got Iconic and Masters, and the next year for sure, we're at least in the spring set where we had Masters come out, we're getting Magic 25. So we're going to get the 25th anniversary of Magic, and we'll probably get something else. Someone made a good point that what we should have is there needs to be basically a Commander-focused Eternal Master set and a Legacy-focused Master set come out every other year, and then or go like Legacy-focused, Modern focused, Commander focused, Modern focused, and then like one a year, and then it goes that cycle so that you get a Modern one every 2 years, and you get every other year you get either a Commander or like a more casual focused one, and or you get a more Legacy focused one. And this was, I think, Chaz Andres kind of wrote this on Star City Games the other week, and that was definitely like the recommendation I liked the most. So that was this year. This is the year of two master sets.
And I think when you think about what was 2017 about for Magic, or for Modern, I would say the most notable thing for me is that the price structure of the format changed. For the first time in 6 years, we saw a legitimate change, an actual drop where the floor is lower than we thought it could be. They didn't tank it, but they made it more approachable. And it doesn't feel like Magic is as expensive of a game as it felt.
It's super open. This is also the first year without a Modern Pro Tour. Which has been an interesting effect, and it'll maybe the only year without a Modern Pro Tour. Getting a Modern Pro Tour next year, so seeing what that effect has on the market, I am very interested to see if Modern just in general becomes more expensive once the Pro Tour happens, just because that's such a high profile focus lens on it. But Modern's been very wide open. Every GP has been totally different, from Tron and Scapeshift dominating this year, to Affinity winning the first one after the bannings, to Death Shadow being the big bad in the room forever. Merfolk won another one this year. Like, just in general, you know, this last weekend, people walked in the tournament being like, you know, the deck that to beat right now is Lantern Control. And yeah. Zach Elsick went undefeated day one.
Yeah.
And then proceeded to lose to 4-2 drop, so, or like 4-3 drop. So, like, Modern as a format's been extremely diverse all year. Just a totally evolving format. You know, the conversation is always, it's interesting because the conversation that seems to happen after almost every GP is, do we need to ban this card? And almost every single time it hasn't happened. Now, right. I can see, I would say right now, walking in the next year, having a Mox Opal ban is something that I definitely think people might need to be looking out for. I think if just because, especially if a team playing Affinity wins the next GP, but I think just in general, having Lantern Control in the format is something that Wizards might be worried of. I don't think Tron's getting a hit. I don't think that's an issue. I think, though, this Modern GP, and we'll get into this more specifically, is going to prove more along the lines of the Tron lands being a problem, not Eldrazi Temple, which is kind of the kick I was on when we discussed this earlier this year.
Yeah, me too.
That, like, that combo of cards could just be a problematic thing. But right now, I think that would be, you know, doing this well at one GP isn't enough.
This was a weird GP top eight. I mean, like, let's be honest. This, you know, and we'll get to break it down. But I talked about this a little bit on 10 minutes. But it just was, we only had one deck that even kind of a little bit resembled a normal interactive fair deck in the top eight. And even that didn't have a total fair approach. It was playing unfair cards in it.
Right. And we'll get it. Yeah. And what's interesting, to continue the conversation of this year before we get into the GP stuff, because we're going to be really tempted to just do that, is this is all the year that they opened it with bannings. Gitaxian Probe was banned, and Golgari Grave Troll was banned to start the year off. Golgari Grave Troll, not, you know, surprising anyone. I actually am kind of really proud of Wizards to have banned that card, as much as I love Golgari Grave Troll, but they unbanned it. It wasn't a problem, and then it became a problem again. And they realized that, and they just took the steps to it. Dredge is still a great deck. Dredge top aided this last GP, so that hasn't been a really problem. In fact, getting the double punch of Gitaxian Probe and Fatal Push coming out within a month of each other, or leaving the format within a month of each other, has definitely hurt Infect as a standing deck. Infect went from one of the top tier decks in the format to a tier 2.5 deck, but it is still around.
I mean, I think the easiest, you know, if the first question we're asking, you know, we published an episode on the 2nd of January this year where we spoiled Fatal Push.
Yeah.
And I think
that's been the defining thing of this year. I think
2017
Fatal Push
has
from
been defined
by Fatal Push.
Yeah, I mean, the format completely changed. You know, you've definitely seen some trends. I think, you know, if we were going to give awards, deck of the year, I think has to probably be Death Shadow, I would think. Death Shadow, even in the middle part, in the earlier part of the year, Death Shadow decks were already competitive.
Yeah, if I'm going to give the deck of the year award to a deck, it would be that. I think close, like a runner-up, like the nominees are Eldrazi Tron,
yep.
Death Shadow, I want it, like, Affinity and then Merfolk would probably be the four. And, like, and Merfolk going from a deck that won a GP to blue-green Merfolk, like, halfway through. Like, there's just some
like
transitions.
Storm and Humans, those are more recent. I think you know.
Storm would be up there. Humans would be a there's the incoming class awards in sports.
Rookie?
Yeah, Rookie of the Year. Like, okay. I would give Humans a Rookie of the Year award.
We should have thought about this. This would have been a really fun segment.
Yeah. We should have done this ahead of time.
Yeah.
but yeah, I think there's like a few of those. You know, like the year before that, I think Lantern of the Control would have won. And walking into this is what's doing really well.
Yeah. I wonder what's the card of the year? Is it?
I mean, Fatal Push. It's so easily Fatal Push.
What would the nominees be? Death Shadow as a card.
Death Shadow as a card. Fatal Push.
Walking Ballista feels like it's
Walking
probably,
Ballista could be
that would be a nominee. I think
Spell Queller is an easy include.
Collective Brutality
is an easy one. Coco maybe, but I think Coco dropped off. I think Coco was more of like last year's crowning kind of thing, where this year it's much more these kind of cards. Yeah, I think to me I would definitely like cement it at like Spell Queller,
Walking Ballista.
Walking Ballista.
Fatal Push. Fatal Death Push. Shadow Brutality. Maybe Street Wraith. I mean, Street Wraith's been big in a few decks, but like...
I think just...
Living End didn't make enough of an impact this year that it's like... That just goes to Death Shadow. Like,
yeah.
So that's been pretty interesting. That's kind of a fun thing. Maybe we'll do that next year. So other things that this year like really stood out and were interesting in Modern. Did you have like a favorite moment or a favorite episode that we did? Do you remember?
I think actually, and it's gonna be a weird one. I think my favorite episode was casting the Magic movie.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
That was really fun. I think
cast Chandra as Madeline Petch.
Yeah.
From Riverdale.
Yeah.
She's so crazy.
Am I wrong?
No, but you stopped watching that show.
Well, I don't know. I'm just going to watch it as a... You're no longer a believer. No, it's just not a weekly... I need to watch that on Netflix all at once.
Yeah, that's fair.
For me to like a show that I can watch weekly, it has to be a popular zeitgeist moment. It has to be a Game of Thrones. It has to be something else where I can...
Riverdale's like Fringe. It's almost that.
There's no one in my life that I get to talk about it every day with.
Except that, incidentally, every single employee of Kesco secretly watches Riverdale. Did you know that?
No, I kind of knew that, yeah.
Oh, it's my favorite thing in the world.
I need to be able to post a thing. I do this for, like I did for Star Wars, and you can go check it out if you've seen it already. It's a cool discussion thread. I like post a discussion for this last week's episode of a thing in the comments, spoilers, and then people just start discussing it as kind of a discussion thread for each thing. Every single episode of Game of Thrones, I did that. That's like, I need to be able to do that for every episode.
Yeah, not enough people watch it for the
AM. Yeah. And it's not like a thing that everyone's like, oh, we need to talk about Riverdale today.
But back to us. I enjoyed that episode a lot. Some people had a problem with that episode. There was definitely some comments. I mean, not like on the whole. But there were some comments I remember on Twitter. Some people just want us to talk about Modern on the show. That's like a thing.
Yeah, and it's weird. Where are we, a Modern podcast? Yeah.
We went pretty off. We went pretty off base with that one. But I remember enjoying it. Like, I think you and I are both pretty big in like movies and TV.
Yeah,
it's definitely our like sort of second.
I think the issue then, and I said this then too, or when we started getting a little bit of pushback on it, it was more that we did like a month of only non-Modern content.
Yeah, we definitely had a weird...
And that month, instead of focusing on Modern, part of that was just there was no Modern GPs, there was no Modern tournaments, there was like, we were like, didn't really get in the flow of paying attention to the SCG yet, we didn't have Hagen Kirk doing kind of data dumps every week for us on the Facebook group, so it was kind of like trying to figure out what to talk about, and the Magic movie stuff was something that was definitely really fun.
I'm actually just like looking at our list of episodes surrounding that, and that's like so not true. People just like to complain. That's what it really is. I'm like looking at our list of episodes here, and they're all like legitimate magic topics.
I'm looking for it.
You and I might have just been more rambly. That happens sometimes.
Yeah, maybe we had more fun recording it than necessarily people had listening to us record it.
For me, a big one was the top 30 all-time decks in Modern. I really liked that.
I liked that one. I also liked ranking the five colors, even though we totally forgot Storm existed as a deck. And it was like the weekend before we recorded it that we hadn't really looked at to make sure, like... was the weekend that Storm broke out as well.
Right.
So it was like this big like, ooh. So like Red's way better than we gave it credit for that list. I think I would put Red over, I don't know. It's hard. Right now the colors are pretty balanced, it feels. I think maybe blue is the worst color.
I'd have to lay it all and think about it again. I think one of the major changes in 2017 that was great was that 10 minutes of Magic started, and then around 4 months into it, it changed. That was about three or four months ago, changed to 10 minutes of Modern.
Yeah.
Which means that instead of me coming up with topics to talk about on there and involving you with just general Magic ideas, I'm always paying attention to tournament results now.
Sure.
So I look at every top 8 that comes out because
I
really want to know like what, I want to come up with new brews and tech and have things to talk about that people want to hear about now on a day-to-day basis. And there's topics that only in the Magic, the Magic sort of canon only last for, 2 days and then they kind of go away. People don't want to talk about things for longer than a couple days sometimes. So it makes it hard for us on this podcast to justify paying that close of attention to every little tiny nuance. Because we record once a week, and people need
to catch up. But now we have a little bit of a finger. I would say, so what would you say are things that we need to improve on?
In the earlier days, we had more guests, and it's difficult. You and I got busier and busier. It feels like every other week one of us is out of town now, so it's hard for us to find a consistent time to record that isn't like 9:30 in the morning on a Tuesday, for instance.
Part of the issue is that since you've joined Kesko, and since Kesko has really started being a real thing, which has happened in this last year, we started recording as part of the workday. We do it in the morning, but that means the availability of guests in general has significantly depreciated because just people have real jobs. And so their availability to record on a 9:30 on a Tuesday versus before, we used to record episodes at 7 p.m. at night. So getting people as guests on evenings was a little bit easier for us to accomplish.
Yeah, it's a harder gig now. I mean, you know, you guys who have been listening to the show for years know that Alex has been building towards owning a company and launching toys and games for a couple of years now. And you've heard me talk a lot about moving into more and more media projects as an on-camera host and producer. And I still do all those things. So the amount of time that I would have to like show up to record at the convenience of a guest is less than it used to be. We have to be on a tighter schedule. We have to be much more careful with our scheduling, and it makes it very difficult to accommodate booking guests.
Yeah, and I think something that we're going to try doing next year, we're going to do a few different things. We're going to, A, make more of an effort to get into video, and I know we make this promise every year in review, and we've never done it, but it becomes a little bit more of a focus because of the games we're producing to create more content on YouTube in general and to start kind of a new, fresh YouTube channel. So that's something we're looking to do.
We just use the Patreon money to buy a camera. We just bought an HD camera and mics.
We got a new mic. Like this year, definitely, we did a good job of updating our equipment. We had gone almost 3 years without a single new piece of equipment, and now we've saved enough on Patreon over the last year to be able to afford getting a Zoom microphone, recorder, and a camera, to be able, and a tripod and other equipment that we didn't have, to be able to do a better job at recording content and making content for you guys. So that's something we're excited for next year. And something I want to be better at is kind of making the video versions of what we're doing. I think something that we maybe need to make an effort on is either looking for a little bit more of some guest hosts that are more rotational and less, this is a Magic Pro that is out there and is a famous guest and they're guesting, but more of a kind of a substitute teacher list, so that if there's days where I'm in Hong Kong or you're in Chicago or we're traveling for whatever reason, we can have one of us get subbed in and with guests that people are already familiar with.
I looked back at the schedule here and it felt like this year we had missed a bunch of episodes. It looks like we actually missed one episode this year, which is shocking to me.
Really?
I just counted. There's four for every single month, except for sometimes there's three, and then there's five the next month. So, and then there's in October, it looks like we missed one or maybe even two.
Okay.
But that's it.
Wow.
So, yeah, not as bad as I thought.
Yeah, I thought we did really bad this year.
Yeah, so I was going to say one of the things is consistency. I mean, that's for me, that's a big one. You and I talk about this a lot, but I do want a little more consistency out of the show, and I think that probably the people that listen to it, when it comes out, for instance, and you know, the same day, the same time kind of a thing, I would love that.
Right.
But again, that's just on us for making the time available. I think another thing is, you and I talked a lot a year ago, there was an expansion in the wings for video. We were going to do it a different way that was coming, and unfortunately it sort of just didn't happen the way that we hoped it was going to happen, and that derailed the momentum there a little bit. We had kind of a plan.
But like literally so the Kesko offices, we just literally added a second floor.
Yeah.
There was like a attic air conditioning duct space that we put in real rafters and floors and lightings. And that area should be done actually next week. And in that area, we've already designated an area where we're going to have a permanent camera and audio equipment set up and make a little set out of that space. And when we do that, that should definitely alleviate some of the at least locational perspectives of our problem. And that'll also allow us to make more consistent content in a place that looks nice. So that's definitely one of the exciting things that's going to happen over the next year.
Yeah, I think, you know, also thinking about other things that we want to do more of. Alex and I talked a lot, and recently we've actually been talking a lot about this. We talk about brew ideas a lot. We talk about cool things we want to do and interesting things. And I'll build them on my phone and I'll sleeve them up and I'll play some games. Sometimes I'll go to a local tournament and try them out. But Alex has been saying that he's been basically shaming me for not playing Modo a lot and telling me that I need to just make time to build these on the Modo collection and show you guys the games so you can actually see us play with these decks at least one time before they just get kicked to the curb.
Right. And part of the reason is Ben doesn't have a PC. He has a Mac, but then the other end of that corner is I bought a $200 Dell laptop that you could just have and carry with you that's really light for another employee of the company. So you can buy a laptop for cheap to play Modo on. So no excuses.
I just don't like losing the experience, the social experience of going to a store and playing. And that's if I'm going to make 4 hours in a week.
Yeah, but you like live in hotels in the middle of nowhere half the year.
Yeah.
That you could be. So, okay. So a few things I want to ask you guys, listeners of this podcast. One,
do you think
Ben
is stupid?
Should how dumb on a scale of 1 to 17 do you think Ben is? And how smart on a scale of 1 to 1 am I? No. Should me and Ben, and Ben or I separately, do more effort to make moto videos? When Arena comes out, would something you'd be interested in is more brew focused content, but in the card availability of Arena, so that won't be able to be modern, but it'll be pseudo standard focused.
Yeah.
What are other things that we could do better for you guys? Now, be nice. You know, we are afraid of asking this because our feelings are hurt. I think someone commented that I interrupt you too often, and I tilted for like 3 days.
No, somebody called me a better host than you. And yeah. You fully tilted.
Yeah, I shouldn't be on the podcast. I like couldn't handle it. Emotionally scarred. And now everyone on the podcast is going to tell me that they agree, and then I'm going to just crawl in a hole. And
Alex tried firing me that day. It was.
I did not. But yeah, so don't say that stuff, but you know, constructive criticism. and we definitely want to hear that. We want to know what you guys think we could do better and stuff we can do cool that's different and ideas like that. That'd be really fun to have a good idea on. But I think on a whole, I think this year was really exciting. I think a lot of cool stuff is happening. I came out with my first game.
Yeah. There's a really cool, so the one that's out right now is super awesome and Super Party Battle. You can get it on thinkgeek.com.
But the one we're planning to come out, we're going to be kickstarting it probably beginning of spring next year.
They're distinctly different games. The one that's out now is a party game. The one that we're coming out with is like a true competitive game. Like it'll feel much more like playing competitive Magic. Tier 1 Magic for you guys, but not with just
a game. And it's not like a mat. It's not Magic. It's a different game.
It's a totally different concept, and it's very cool. And as somebody who doesn't play a lot of games, I like that game a lot. So,
nice. Get ready for that. And you know, there'll be Kickstarter, and you'll definitely be hearing about it on this episode. Not to mention all the other stuff. You know, we're going to see these things called drop dot balls. They're coming out in February, and you're going to see things called ice hoops. They're also coming out in February at different stores, and we're going to talk about that a lot as well. So those are a little bit less for you guys because it's like more children's toys or activity toys, but I haven't seen a person pick up a drop dot ball that didn't love it, so get ready.
But you're going to be able to walk into major, major, major retailers all over the world, and you're going to be able to point to a product and be like, the guy
that
made that.
Well, in the United States and Canada.
That's all over the world. And we're working on it. And you're going to be able to say the guy that makes that product is the podcast host I listen to every single week.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben helped accomplish that. That's why he travels all the places too.
Yep, exactly.
And that's why he's in a bunch of hotel rooms that he probably should be streaming Moto on.
Yeah, cool.
Are you ready to talk about the GP?
Yes, I think that's probably a good plan. All right, so we've got Michael Grothy, who's now sitting here with us, and he's going to talk about the GP results from this last GP because he's going to play in the team GP coming up.
That's right. Hi, everyone.
What's going on? How you doing?
I'm good.
So before we get into GP stuff, because we're going to go over GP Oklahoma City, and we're going to go into GP Santa Clara.
Santa Clara is the one I'm going to.
Yep.
Ben has asked me to allow him to pitch you a deck.
I don't have to ask for allowing things. I had a concept that I talked about really quickly.
Yeah, sure. He did say, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. I had a concept that I talked about on 10 Minutes of Modern last night that I think it's kind of silly and fun, but I want to share the logic behind this really quickly. So I did a thing last night, 4 underplayed one drops, and the 4 underplayed one drops that I listed were Weather Wayfarer, Bloodhall Ooze, the 1/1 that turns into a 3/2 in white.
Toolcraft Exemplar.
Toolcraft Exemplar and Vexing Devil. I've talked a lot about Vexing Devil. You guys know I have an affection for that card. Toolcraft Exemplar is pretty straightforward because there's a lot of good artifacts in Modern. That card probably should see more play. And Weathered Wayfarer actually does see a decent amount of play as a 1/1 or a 2/2. But Bloodhall Ooze
does
came,
it?
People, yeah. It, I, when I posted
I've seen
that.
Cool lists.
I think it's more popular when people are playing Ranger of Eos.
Yeah.
Yes.
That card's like actually like a legitimately good Magic card because it's unique. The other ones are like fringe. They're like
they all have their
purposes.
The problem with Weathered Wayfarer is more that there just aren't the same amount of good lands to find with it than
exactly.
It is that it's a bad card.
Yeah, you can't get Caracas or Wasteland.
Yeah.
So the theory that I had was...
If only.
The theory that I had was that...
That'd be bad for everyone.
The scalability of power on a Magic card, it trends down significantly with each extra mana you add to the CMC, right? So a one drop is very powerful. If it's a really like pushed one drop, it is great because you can play it on turn one. In Modern, I would say two drops are a little less good, but almost as good as one drops because the format is dominated by good ones. Three drops are like 50% worse than ones and twos. Four drops are like 70% worse. The effect of the card's power, the more it costs.
I do disagree for two reasons.
Well, let me finish the thought because we'll fully get into this.
Well, I you're going to skip over the percentages you gave on the quality of converted mana cost, I think it's wrong.
Well, let me just finish explaining.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to interrupt me?
Yeah. I do.
I'm going to finish explaining. So the theory was that it's not about card power. It's about effect on the game and how much more valuable it is to draw a good one drop on turn one versus, say, a good one drop on turn four, right? So if you have a really powerful one drop that obviously in a vacuum is not as good as a great four drop, the difference obviously is that you can play it on turn one. You can't play a four drop on turn one, and the game is in a totally different state by turn four. So that was why I started to think about, what does Blood Hall Ooze do in a format where we now have a whole bunch of really good green-black two-drops? So Grim Flayer is a staple card in Modern. People play a ton of that card. Anyway, before I fully ramble on this deck, go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, four-drops are, like, way better than three-drops by, like, a wide, wide margin.
Agreed. That I agree.
Because Fatal Push exists, but more because Inquisition of Kozilek exists. And also, the power level of a four-drop that Wizards is willing to print is much higher than a three drop for standard cards. They're fine with a four drop coming into play and dominating the game versus a three drop where they have like a weird 1 foot in, 1 foot out. There's a lot of three mana two twos that are just bad. Where, like, think about how many four drops Jund has access to that all see play in different ways. From like,
well, they're starting to play Goblin Rabble Master now.
True. Yeah. And there are some three drops that see play. I'm not saying there aren't good three drops. I'm just saying, like, in modern history, the amount of four drops that have seen play versus the amount of three drops
that's
that see
fair.
Play
I just think Jund
higher.
Is a bad example because right now I feel like a lot of Jund players are shaving four drops in favor of Goblin Rabble Master.
But I mean, like, Junk also see, like, people are playing Sea Drynos again.
So I don't
next
disagree with you.
Souls, right? If a three mana card.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with you.
I'm not saying three mana spells are bad, but I'm saying that saying it goes from 50% to 75% when I think it's really, like, because of Inquisition of Kozilek more than anything, it's like parity, if not weighted towards four drop.
So I would just the only reason I would disagree with you is that the only reason I would disagree with you, a three drop is still on the whole pound for pound better than a four drop in modern, because a four drop means that to play it on the fourth turn of the game, you have to hit four lands. You have to hit four lands, and it has to have enough of an impact on the game that your opponent, by turn four, we know modern, by the way, is a turn four format, hasn't just won the game already. Because, like, there's not that many four drops people play in modern that come down and stop your opponent from doing what they're going to do.
Yeah, there's a bunch of ones that just win the game. I mean, like,
sure, agreed. So, but my point would still stand, which is that one drops and two drops are fairly similar in power level. Two drops are more powerful. One drops, if they're great, are the best cards because
I think what he's getting at is that tapping out on turn three for a three drop that doesn't, like, immediately stop your opponent from winning is better than a four drop.
Yeah, but my point is that Wizards doesn't print three drops that do that, but they do print four drops that do
that.
Well,
I just mean, like, you can afford probably to play Geist of St. Traft on turn three, but playing Chandra on turn four and not getting killed is, like, not really a luxury you have in a lot of matchups.
So this is all just theory crafting, by the way, and the whole entire point.
We could do an entire episode on this.
Yeah, for sure. And
so
the whole point.
Do that later.
The whole point of bringing it up was that thinking about one drops, and when you look in a vacuum and say it, like Blood Hall Ooze, it's like, that card's not really very good because it's going to be a 1-1 on turn one, and there's not a way in Magic you can make that a 3-3 on turn two. It doesn't work. You can't get a black and green card on the battlefield the same turn. So it ends up being like a long
game. Separate. Wait, why?
You can use Simeon Spirit Guide, but that's bad. Yeah. Let's talk about good stuff.
So the idea was looking at one drops that are undervalued and how can you make them good. And so I started thinking about this, right? Grim Flayer is a very good card. Obviously, people play it already. And I started thinking, what other black-green two drops do people play? People used to play Putrid Leech in the standard. That's always been a card that's on the fringe. It becomes a 4-4.
Putrid Leech comes up once in a while. I've seen randomly people ship you lists.
I really, really like, what's it called? The Troll.
Lotloth Troll
is another one. And the last one that is particularly good with this card is Noose Constrictor, which is a standard. That is a standard standout.
Winding Constrictor.
That's the one.
Noose Constrictor is the one that you discard.
It's the new Wildmonger. Yeah. Winding Constrictor was a standard standout and has legitimate application. So imagine this for a second, okay? Turn one, you play Blood Hall Ooze, right? It's a 1-1 for one that at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have a black permanent, you put a +1/+1 counter on it, and a green permanent, you do the same. Turn two, you cast Lotloth Troll. Turn three, play your third land, you cast Winding Constrictor. You discard Slitherhead, the 1-1 for 1 that has Scavenge 0. Now, because you've got Winding Constrictor on the battlefield, because you've discarded it to your troll. Your troll's a 4-3 instead of a 2-1. And then you exile it, you scavenge it, to put two more counters on the troll. You've now got a 6-5 trample with one mana still open to regenerate. And your Bloodhull Ooze that you played on turn one is now a 4-4 because you put three counters on it on account of the Whining Constrictor.
So I like everything here other than...
Wait, isn't it a 3-3? Because it should have gotten two counters at the beginning of turn three because of the Lotlith Troll. But then that's
You're right. It's a 3-3. Yeah, because you have to play that. Yeah.
It just gets them the first time or
every turn
it every gets
upkeep.
Bigger?
But on the upkeep of turn three is where it becomes a 3-3. So when you're attacking on turn three, you're attacking with your big Lotlith Troll and your 3-3 block.
As long as you have Slitherhead. My whole idea here was that how many black-green 2-drops are there that are sweet? Could you play another 1-drop alongside this card that could justify playing this deck? And if you're going 1-for-1 on resources, is there a way to just sit there and make your ooze like enormous so that with a Whining Constrictor, this thing's going to be like a 10-10 or even bigger than a Death Shadow at a certain point in the game by not really having to do very much?
The Bloodhull Ooze Whining Constrictor interaction is definitely cool because Whining Constrictor provides a black permanent and a green permanent, and it has like
added value.
Great synergy with the card.
Yeah.
I mean, even just turn one Bloodhull Ooze, turn two Whining Constrictor without all that other fancy stuff.
Yeah.
Assuming your opponent doesn't have a removal spell, you're going to have like a really big Bloodhull Ooze.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not looking at the card, but if I recall correctly, it's two different triggered abilities that trigger separately, right? So one will trigger and put two, and then the other will trigger and put
Holy
two,
crap.
Right?
I didn't realize that. You're right. They're two different abilities.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's going to, it
so
becomes
be,
a
you'll
five
be attacking
five?
For five on turn three, plus if Whining Constrictor can profitably attack seven.
That's right? Really good. Anyway, this was just an idea that I was thinking about. Here was the biggest problem with this deck. And we'll start talking about the results in a second. My big issue here was that I wanted in my mind the black-green aura from Shadowmoor Eventide, the one that would get all the bonuses if it enchanted a black and green creature, to be good. And it's one of the really bad ones. It's a 5-mana common.
So 9 times out of 10,
yeah.
When you say, here's the problem with this deck,
yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
The problem with this deck is that this one card from this one set of this cycle that I'm a little obsessed with makes it not work anymore because it's not playable. I feel like what you described was good, and then now you don't like it because of a card that doesn't have to be in it, and would probably, even if it was like a 2-mana version of this card that was good, I'd still think it would be bad, but the rest of this deck is 100% a thing that I am on board with
right
now.
it's pretty cool. I think like the Bloodhull Ooze thing with Whining Constrictor just in itself is really good, and I think that there's an interesting play here with Scavenge. I think that one Scavenge card, though it seems like it's not particularly good, I actually think is pretty good. Like
I think
you have enough ways to discard it to get value out of it. It's just going to be a free 2 counters on something.
Well, and you can play Grimflayer is another black green card that stocks your graveyard with juicy Slitherheads.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't think there are any other good playable Scavenge cards, right? Like Verrall's kind of, but none of the creatures in this deck.
They're
really
all just
going to
be
Scavenge
2-for-2.
The 3-mana haste for 3 isn't very good.
Sure.
Speaking of
Scavenge,
Scavenging Ooze seems good in this deck. It's like a 1 constrictor.
I think Jun counters is a sick idea. I think
That's really good.
I don't know. I feel like in an aggressive deck, like if you're building a deck around +1/+1 counters, it's going to be aggressive and you're looking for 1-drops. And I feel like I don't think that there's a 1-drop that's better in this deck than Bloodhull Ooze.
There's also the possibility.
No. I'm just against the need of the Shadowmoor enchantment. I think everything in this deck sounds sick.
I think we're past that.
There's also the idea that Slitherhead is a black and green permanent for one, so that on turn two, if you say like wanted to play like Bloodhull on turn one, turn two, you play the Slitherhead and like Fatal Push their creature, it means your guy's going to get bigger on turn three.
I think you can get it like, if you want 3 1-drops, you play Experiment One and the Ooze, and then you get away with that. And if you really want to get spicy, you could play Young Wolf.
Well, there's another deck, by the way, just for the record, that Hagen Kirk sent me a link to. And this is a deck on Twitter that he saw. And it's another +1/+1 counters deck. But this deck's like all about Evolve.
Yeah. And is it the one that like you destroy your... It's the blue-green one that it destroys like Young Wolf with...
Pongify.
Yeah.
Sick,
and you get 3/3s out of it. Yeah, that's spicy.
Yeah. It's like so my style. I like red Pongify and I was just in.
I think... I mean, obviously Walking Ballista and... Hangerback Walker are another 2 cards that are probably something to consider in this deck as well.
Yeah, I think they're a little less efficient. They're a little too...
Hangerback Walker's...
Well, it just costs a lot of... Like, it costs
getting
a lot
free
of...
counters on it's really good.
I mean, I don't think that you would play Hangerback as a 4-of, but I think it's got a home in
they
the deck.
They also have no
just
color,
like
which is a problem for your... I mean, what I think, if you want to make the Blood Hall Ooze plan work with the, all the black green stuff, you need to find other ways to make the black green colors and, well, but, and multicolored things relevant. And right now, they're not.
Oh, you know what? Hanger back and Walking Ballista. If we're playing Grimflare in this deck, they also add another card type.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can just dump them in the graveyard early on if you're light on mana, and then hopefully get to that Delirium.
Collective Brutality too is definitely a must in here.
Discard Slitherhead.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I think it is because it's a black removal spell.
If you're playing Lotlith Troll too, I think there's like possibly Lotlith Troll and Grimflare, there's like possibly other graveyard shenanigans that can make their way into this deck.
For sure. Right.
I'm not thinking of any off the top of my head.
Shambling Shell, anyone?
There could be something in here.
Ooh. Shambling Shell is like kind of sweet. all right, let's get on to the GP.
All right, so this last GP was crazy. Tron, or actually every single deck in the top eight, cheats things into play.
Well, yeah, so
either through making mana faster than it should in ways that it shouldn't, or
so here's what I noticed about this topic.
Good old fashioned show and tell.
You have three Tron decks, right? You have two mono green, one black green. You have two Scapeshift decks. You have a Dredge deck, you have a Jeskai deck, and a Living End deck.
Yeah. And the Jeskai deck is not just any Jeskai
deck.
It's
Jeskai Breach.
It's through the Breach Jeskai.
It's what's the most fascinating about this top eight is you've got three Tron decks that are like, they're basically unfair decks with like kind of interaction, but only like gigantic, huge, sweeping interaction.
No. Green Black has Fatal Push.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the reason.
That's why it's black. Yeah. It's Collective Brutality in the sideboard and Thoughtseize too, right? That's it. That's the reason.
You've got two Scapeshift decks, which again are pretty much combo decks, trying to do something unfair. You've got Dredge, which is like an all-in, I'm going to win the game early by putting an unfair clock, doing things that magic cards aren't supposed to do. And you've got Living End, which is again a deck that's trying to take complete advantage of something that isn't supposed to work like this.
Yeah, I mean, all of these decks cheat stuff in the play in one way or another. Well, Tron gets 7 mana on turn 3 in a way that lets them play 7 mana planeswalkers. You know, Titan Shift gets, you know, through ramp a bunch of mana earlier than they should. And then literally Jeskai Breach, Living End, and Dredge put things into play that it shouldn't be able to in a way that the like rules aren't made to work with.
The only deck that's cheated. Not supposed to be an unfair deck is Jeskai. And
it's through the Breach Jeskai. It's cheating in Emrakul.
This feels more to me like when I read this Jeskai Breach list, this feels like the old Splinter Twin decks where it was like, okay, we're going to play this blue-red control deck, and then we have these 8 to 10 Pokemon cards. That's what Andrew used to always say. Yeah. Kind of feels exactly like that. You have 4 Through the Breach in this deck and 4 Emrakul. And otherwise, this is just a straight-up Jeskai deck.
And it's sweet because Through the Breach is an instant. So you can you can just hold up Cryptic if you're afraid your combo opponent is going to win. And then, oh, you don't need to I don't need to play Cryptic. I guess here's an Emrakul on your end step. Because Through the Breach, you sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step.
Right. So once the end step happens, it triggers. It's definitely...
I mean, that was something cool that Splinter Twin had access to as well, because they could like, you know, oh, I don't need to play any counterspells on your turn. Here's a Deceiver Exarch. Untap Splinter Twin.
Right. Oh, that means that's the game plan.
This is like a very similar game plan, because Through the Breach is also an instant similar to Deceiver Exarch.
The invocation art on Through the Breach is actually really sick. It's one of the few invocations that like looks really, really, really cool.
Is there anything in this deck other than Emrakul that you can get into play? Just Snapcaster Mage?
Four snaps, 4 Emrakuls.
And it's interesting that they're also not playing any Nahiri, because like a lot of Jeskai control decks when Nahiri first came out were playing like Nahiri with Emrakul as a win con. And this deck is playing Emrakuls for a different reason and didn't even bother putting any Nahiris in the sideboard.
And I can see putting a Nahiri in somewhere. I think part of the issue... How many lands is this deck playing? 22? But it has Search for Ascanta to find those.
It's crazy that was a major thing that happened. We talked about year in review just before you came on. One of the major trends in Modern was decks on the whole shaved 2+ lands. Like Modern doesn't play 24 lands at all anymore. It plays like plays 19 to 22.
So I'm currently playing Grixis Control in Modern, and Search for Ascanta does kind of allow for a little bit of land shaving, because the majority of the time when you play it, like, you want an extra mana more than anything else. And then later in the game, you're able to, you know, leverage it as a huge source of card advantage. But that extra land. Right. The extra land that Search for Ascanta gives you is really huge in a control deck.
Right.
Especially a control deck playing multiple 4-drop counterspells.
Yeah.
Just 3 of them.
That's multiple. That's more than four.
I mean, there's nothing this deck is... That's the funniest part to me. This deck is not playing anything in it that isn't just straight-up Jeskai control other than these eight cards. And like, what
I think it's really good. Like, I think this should be maybe the way this deck goes forward. I think this is really hard for decks to deal with, and it plays Splinter Twin in a way that's fascinating.
Well, because, like, a lot of the recent... everybody knows that Jeskai's been the most brewed with and, like, I would say dominant of the three color combinations, where but not in the sense that it's winning, dominant in the sense that you keep seeing different variants of it show up in top eights, and they're all different. So the Jeskai Geist decks got really popular again. You see the Spell Queller versions. You have a version like this. It just, people keep kind of coming up with their own takes on it. We've seen the Nimble Obstructionist one with Nahiri's. Like, people do all kinds of crazy stuff with this color combination, and so I do feel like eventually there's going to be a regression of the mean, and we will see one solid, consistent version of this deck, but it just hasn't been a thing yet.
People, well, I don't know. I mean, I think that the tempo deck is pretty different. Like, in the top 32, there's a different deck that's playing, you know, three Geist, two Mantis Rider, four Spell Queller, alongside the signature four Snapcasters.
Yeah, I did see the Mantis Rider Jeskai deck, which is,
and
again,
that's, like, you know, pretty different from this deck because it's more looking to slam down a threat, you know, on turn three or close to turn three, and then protecting that threat. Whereas the Jeskai Breach deck is just a control deck with Through the Breaches of Wind condition.
Right, and most Jeskai decks, like, classically are looking to, like, the point of Jeskai is, oh, I can accidentally burn my opponent out. Because Snapcaster Mage, four Lightning Bolt, and a few Lightning Helixes lets you. This only has two Lightning Bolt and two Lightning Helixes. Like, the Lightning Helixes are there to stall, and the Lightning Bolt are there just because you want six Path to Exiles.
You know, you want Snap Bolt. I mean, I think when you talked about the Mantis Rider deck that you saw, Mantis Rider's a thing because Fatal Push is more prominent than Lightning Bolt, and that is an advantage that you're playing a 3-drop. That's, like, a thing.
Yeah, the 3 toughness is way less relevant than the 3 CMC.
Totally. Right. Totally. Yeah, this deck is sweet. The other decks in the top 8, like, definitely the black-green Tron is an interesting deck.
Do you guys think that Tron needs a ban?
No. Okay. I just think it just... This is such a different... This is such a different top 8 than we've been seeing out of, like, the SCGs.
I think this is just a top 8 that's capitalizing on everybody playing midrange.
Yeah,
The Jeskai Geist decks are on the rise. Death Shadow is obviously a thing. And then these decks kind of go over the top of, like, you know, even Eldrazi Tron and decks like that, because, like, what is, you know, turn 2 Chalice of the Void do to any of the decks in the top 8?
Right.
Totally.
So, yeah, like, these decks are just, you know, a lot of the top decks in the format were more mid-rangey, and these decks came in to capitalize. Mm-hmm.
Most interesting thing about this top 8, or about this this Tron, the black-green one, is that it's got two copies of Ravenous Trap in the sideboard, which is, like, when you read Ravenous Trap and you think about where the format is right now, how has this not just been, like, one of the premier sideboard cards? I haven't seen somebody cast a Ravenous Trap in quite a while, and I forgot this card existed, and it costs zero. It's like there's so many decks in the format that you just want to have this in your hand. Yeah, it's, for those that don't know, it's black-black two for an instant trap. If an opponent had three or more cards put into their graveyard from anywhere this turn, you make pay zero rather than paying its mana cost. Exile all cards from target player's graveyard. This is in your hand. You don't have to commit any mana to it. You don't have to play a spell bomb. You don't have to play a relic. You don't have to build it into your game plan. It's just in your hand as a free spell. It's like playing Fairy Macabre, except it's not two targeted cards. It's the whole graveyard. It just ends dredge. Like, it just wins. It's really, really, really good.
Well, it does the thing that most blast dredge cards do, which is you exile their whole graveyard. The problem with this versus other effects sometimes is any non-repeatable version, dredge sometimes has a chance to bounce back.
Recover, yeah.
But it's definitely very good against dredge. There's a reason they're playing it. It's definitely one of the better cards there. And it's really good with decks that focus on colorless mana that really need to just nuke a graveyard. Like, and that's what these dredge decks
also
are doing.
I think that this is worse than a lot of the repeatable ones for against, like, like Tarmogoyf decks or stuff like that, where you might want, like, Grimflayer Tarmogoyf decks, where you might want some Grave Hate. Like, something like Relic of Progenitus is going to keep them off of Tarmogoyf, but you don't necessarily, like...
need to nuke their graveyard.
Yeah. And I mean, also, the three cards in their graveyard in one turn might not even happen, depending on the way things go.
It's also just the point, like, here is that Tron is good against Tarmogoyf. Like, the reason they can get away with it is that, like, a deck that's playing Tarmogoyf isn't going to beat Tron 9 times out of 10.
It's also really good that against Snapcaster decks, like, this is, in a lot of cases, like, against the Shadow decks.
Well, how does Snapcaster... I mean, like, sometimes they'll get three cards in their graveyard in one turn, and, like, that does happen. I'm not saying it doesn't, but this this is very specifically my bad graveyard matchups are the ones that are like Living End or Dredge that they're pumping their entire deck filled with spells and I need to be able to nuke them or I lose versus something like...
You don't think that like sometimes end of turn in Shadow, they're going to like end of turn Thought Scour and then they're going to try to snapcast or do something and you do this in response and then their whole next turn they were going to cast Tassiger or Angler is just over?
Yeah, but those decks also drew three cards there. Like their game plan of like I'm accidentally getting my graveyard filled so I can cast these spells for cheaper is important to them, but it's not like they didn't cast seven other spells that they're also drawing in their new cards and putting threats into play.
I think that because we're talking about Tron here where their main Grave Hate card historically has been Relic of Progenitus. I feel like against Grixis Death Shadow in particular, Relic of Progenitus is where you want to be because you can just play it out early in the game and start keep making it very difficult for them to dredge without committing your entire card to it.
And then just keep track of like, do I go over this? So the reason you need to look at it is why did they play this instead of Relic? I think it is because of this is better against the deck matchups that are harder for it to beat because
it's also very good against Gifts Ungiven, which is like a matchup that Storm has to keep an eye on.
Sure. Yep,
for sure.
And I think this card is really good against Storm. I think like things that Tron has problems with are Storm and Dredge, not Jund and Grixis
really
Shadow.
Good against Storm,
and especially if you're like tapping out on turn three for you know some outrageous Eldrazi whatever turn three or four, you don't have to leave up that one mana
exactly.
Because, you know, the Storm player can play around Relic by waiting for you to tap out and then playing Gifts Ungiven. But with this card, then there's no way for them to play around it. You either have it or you don't.
There's almost nothing that we can say that can quantify to newer players how important zero mana actually is at high-level Magic, like in the more eternal
especially
formats.
Especially instant speed.
Like, that's even why a second ago when we were talking about Slitherhead, it's like, yeah, Slitherhead's a bad card. But on the other hand, it's like, if you have a deck set up where you're going to be able to get 2 power or 4 extra power for nothing, for nothing. That's worth something. It's worth a lot. So when you can respond, you can play, you can commit to the board, and you can respond to somebody with this card for nothing. It's like that is worth so much. I mean, it's why Force of Will has always been the defining card in Legacy.
Yeah.
So,
So moving into...
other decks in the top 8?
No, I was going to say the next GP here. Do you want to finish this off?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, I was going to say, so based on the top 8 that's happened at Grand Prix Oklahoma City, what decks do you think are going to be well-positioned moving into the Team GP on the 7th of January?
Well, I just think there's going to be a lot more Tron hate. I mean, I also think let's call a spade here. We didn't mention Zach Elsick and his run with Lantern, or you mentioned it earlier, but he went 9-0 day one, or 8-0 day one, right?
And there were quite a bit of pros speaking Lantern's praises on Twitter as well.
Yep, and Lantern Control hit.
Well, either speaking Lantern's praises or talking about how they wish it didn't exist. But either way, there was a lot of buzz about Lantern going into the day one of this GP.
And John Bauer placed 11th with Lantern Control.
And that's just another, like... you know, unfair doing something that you're not supposed. Like
Sam Black is also 20th with Lantern.
Yeah, I have a feeling that this next Grand Prix you're going to see a lot more dominance out of much, much, much more like fair, aggressive, trying to just not allow you to do these sort of things. Decks.
Well, but fair and aggressive are things that Tron preys on, and like people like there's going to be a percentage of the people going to that tournament being like, oh, Tron's good, I'm gonna play it. So like,
you don't think that like there'll be a lot of merfolk decks that want to play eight copies of Seas and just take out
Tron? Also, you know, depending on how aggressive you are, like I guess Jund aggro I wouldn't play, but if you're like Burn, I think that's pretty hard for Tron.
Yeah, but I think Burn just has a collect. Yeah, and it's a meta. Yeah, I mean these are definitely good options.
I think disruptive
to look at.
I think you're gonna just see a lot of disruptive aggressive decks. So I think humans will probably make a return.
Affinity.
I think Affinity. No, yeah, I think you'll see Burn. I think Merfolk to me seems like a pretty obvious one. I could see a lot of people going in trying to play Merfolk. Playing Spreading Seas, a bunch of Lords, and like two copies of Seas Claim or even the full eight seems
pretty good. I think for the teams that are out there that they're like, oh, we're standard players and one of our buddies plays Legacy but none of us have a modern deck, Merfolk is like one of the easiest places for them to accidentally fall into. Probably because they're reprinting a bunch of cards and then just like it's not that expensive. And it is relatively well positioned because of Spreading Seas being good against Tron that they might take that on.
People have been talking a lot on Twitter calling it Tropical Merfolk now because there's the blue-green version people play.
And it just, yeah, I would say one or the other.
It goes back and forth. I mean, we talk about that a lot. Like, I think at this point, it's still 50-50, right? I don't think there's
I haven't seen Mono Blue Merfolk do well this year. I've seen Tropical Merfolk do well, so.
And if Tron and Scapeshift are specifically what you're trying to beat going into this GP, then I think that you want to play a faster version, and I think the green version is faster because they have access to a two-power one drop.
Mm-hmm. It's not about
Blue doesn't.
It's not about playing Master of Waves and swinging for the win on turn five. It's about killing them on turn three.
You need to hit them hard and fast because it's not just Tron we're talking about here. I mean, Scapeshift also was
right.
I mean, Scapeshift won, right?
Yeah.
So you know,
though, like the other thing is Tron, like Living End is Merfolk is bad against Living End because Living End has instant speed 3-mana board wipes. So yes. Like there are
you
other
can pack
decks here
to beat Living End if you're really worried about that matchup.
But the problem that Merfolk has against Living End isn't what they're bringing into play. It's that they have the instant speed board wipe to take their stuff out of play. Like the issue they have is not necessarily the like, oh, because eventually they just play their six drop for six mana.
Well, so, okay. I mean, if you're worried about Living End, you could play like Remand.
Exactly. Merfolk decks.
You do that.
There's always a flex. There's always six flex slots in the Merfolk deck. And I've seen the ones go heavier on creatures, but the six flex slots will usually, sometimes they'll end up with three Dismember and three Spell Pierce. Sometimes it'll be a Snare, three Pierce, and two Remand. You don't usually see Remand, but you usually see the one drop ones. So mm-hmm. I could see just playing four copies of Pierce, and like that's what you do.
So if I'm walking that team tournament, I'm taking Affinity. Do you know what almost none of the decks in this top eight have?
Graveyard Hate.
Artifacts.
Or Artifact Hate.
You know what? Also, people are going to be shaving Artifact Hate for Graveyard Hate because Dredge and Living End.
Right. Yeah. The classic conundrum is, do I bring Stony Silences or Rest in Peace? And this is a top eight that really wants me to bring in Rest in Peace.
I always bring Forage.
Four Leyland, 684, Rest in Peace, four Living, just and done.
My sideboard's always the same. There's like certain matchups I always fear. It's because I only play one kind of deck, but yeah. Like I always have the same sideboard in every deck I play.
I don't know. I feel like Flame Jab is probably a card that's pretty good against Affinity anyway, right?
Flame Jab. God, I want that deck to be good. I bought all the cards for that deck. The only things I don't have now are the loams. I just don't have the loams. I even bought the lands.
All right, so the card got full while recording the episode, and we missed a little bit of what we recorded while you were gone. While Ben was talking about the deck he's been working on that involves Life of the Loam, and the only card he doesn't have is Life of the Loam, I gave him his Christmas gift that I had bought earlier this week and was sitting in the desk that we're recording on for me to give to him eventually.
It was a surprising and unexpected moment. It was really nice on the cast. We were thinking about trying to Hollywood you guys and recreate it for the show. We decided not to.
Yeah, but I gave him a playset of Life of Looms.
Really
so
nice.
Merry Christmas, Ben.
Thank you.
And then we got in a little bit of a detail of like why is, you know, the way Life of Loam is good, but we kind of missed all that. The moral of the story is that I love that card. It's great.
Card's sweet.
okay, so getting back onto what we were talking about. So now that, you know, we talked about Affinity, we've talked about Merfolk, we talked about Burn to a certain extent, we talked about other decks that are kind of like the second level. What is your head at right now of where you would want to go
for
GP Santa Clara?
So Tron, Scapeshift, and Graveyard decks are obviously level one right now because they just like broke out of nowhere and top eighted a GP. And level two is these decks that beat those, right? Like the fast aggro decks, Affinity, Burn, and
Merfolk
decks like that. Yeah. And so what I'm looking to play is probably some type of Jeskai because I love playing with Cryptic Command. I played blue Scapeshift for a long time until it became less good than red-green, and then I frustratedly traded off my Scapeshifts, and now I've been playing Grixis, which is not really a deck that I would want to play at a GP, although I love playing FNM type events with it because it's kind of mentally fatiguing because pretty much all of your matches are like 40 plus minutes, and when you play 9 40 plus minute matches, it really wears on you.
There's exactly one person on the planet that I think should be playing Grixis.
Yeah, I also don't think Grixis is as well positioned because of its like almost unwinnable Tron matchups unless you're Corey Burkhart.
Yeah, who was 15th place in this GP.
Yeah, he was 15th at OKC in this field of a bunch of Lantern Control and Tron.
It doesn't make sense. It's so great.
But I'm not Corey Burkhart, so I am not looking to play Grixis. But that's the reason that I'm looking to play Jeskai, because the top Jeskai decks right now are not just pure control decks that are looking to beat you as Sphinx's Revelation for the most part. They are decks that are looking to play a control game plan, but they can win out of nowhere, which I think is valuable against right. Tron, and also just valuable for your psyche, because if you're able to play a 20-minute match at some point during the day, you can kind of use that time to recharge, go to the bathroom, get some water.
If you're if you're round three to match six opponent is a free win for you because you've got Emrakul on in turn five.
Yeah, and I mean, if you either Emrakul them lunch. Or Geist of St. Traft them, I haven't decided which of those two cards I'm going to be playing, but it's going to be one of them.
Based on what we've talked about this episode, and this is obviously, you know, hurts me inside to say this because Geist of St. Traft is a wonderful card, but I'm leaning really towards Emrakul. My one issue with this deck as it stands right now is what Splinter Twin was good at, what even like Pod was good at back in the day. Is the, you know, yes, they have these free wins. They have these cards that, as Ben has said, are just like Pokemon cards. They just, they're in your deck. If you put them into the table, the game ends. But you don't have an alternate win condition with the current, the Jeskai Breach deck that top aided here. You have only two Bolts and two Lightning Helixes. Oh, sure. So your burn plan isn't really there. So either upping those or figuring that out is something I think of.
And only two Celestial Colonnades as well, which is like another blue-white backup plan.
Right. So you're like really the only threat you have is Emrakul here, which seems
like... And you don't even have a Nahiri game plan. You have to actually just resolve a Through the Breach. So if your opponent brings in four Dispels, you're going to have a rough time.
Right. And so what I would be looking to do is somewhere in this list add alternative win conditions. Of some variety, be it a Geist of St. Traft in the sideboard or the main, a Vendilion Click somewhere in the list, though that does turn on some of your opponent's removal, something on that level to give your deck a little bit more of a ability to dodge left.
Yeah, so I think I'm with you. I think the easiest and smartest plan on there is just to go heavier with Lightning Bolt. You just play more of them. Play more Bolts to go with your snaps. I mean, I think the deck's a little less versatile if you up the Bolt and Helix count. But if you want to be able to just kill people, then I think that's probably what you have to do.
I think you could cut the Singleton Electrolyze for a Bolt. Like, Electrolyze is fine, but I don't know where it's amazing right now versus...
Yeah, it's the
especially in a... I mean, here's the problem. This weekend, Electrolyze was whatever. But next GP, when the format is going to be Affinity Merfolk... as the main two decks you have to beat.
Or Black-White Token shows up out of nowhere to kill you because it... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about going to a big modern tournament like a GP is you're always just going to have somebody's playing their pet deck because they live close to the GP and they're going to go and they're going to play their favorite deck in the world because this is their big chance to play it at a large event. And, you know, when that deck is Black-White Tokens or, you know, Flame Jab Life from the Loam or something, then you just have to be ready to beat something like that.
How many buys do you have?
I don't know how team buys work.
Okay.
Oh, personally, I don't have any buys because it's been a busy year for me. I haven't gotten a chance to go to a lot of GPs, which is why I'm super excited. I know that one of my teammates definitely has one, if not two buys, but I don't know how team buys work. I think that previously in team tournaments, there have been zero buys anyone.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's the way they're doing it nowadays or not, because the last time I went to a team GP was Return to Ravnica Team Sealed.
Got it. So the one thing I will say about this is there's two things. One, the more buys you have, the more you should be metagaming the field, because you know the last or the GP Los Angeles, for instance, I came to Tron, but I came to the tournament with Tron because I had metagamed. I was like, these are the seven decks that I need to be able to beat. This deck is really good against all of these. It has a really good game plan against Tron or this deck because I have these free wins built in. Great, I have a good game plan. But because I had no buys, my first three rounds were against 8-whack goblins, a Birthing Pod Pain Artist deck, and or a Collected Company Pain Artist deck, and like one other random deck that were all just like. Blood Artist, Collected Company deck, and just like, oh, these are matchups I had no plan on being able to beat or was not worried about at all because no one's playing
Zoo.
Well,
so that's one of the reasons, I mean, and this is also just like the way that I personally enjoy playing Magic and I feel like am good at playing Magic is that's one of the reasons that I'm looking to play something more reactive rather than just going with Affinity. I was actually considering Affinity for a long time because I do enjoy the kind of like... decision trees involved in the games with Affinity, where you have to figure out when to sack things to Ravager, where to equip plating, how to spend your mana most efficiently, when to animate lands. And I kind of like those decisions, and I do think that Affinity is going to be well positioned here if a lot of people are on big mana. But I really just like decks that can, you know, play in a way that can answer a lot of the field. And I think that Jeskai, if I face a Collected Company Blood Artist deck or an 8-whack deck, as long as I'm prepared, you know, with a little bit of life gain like Blessed Alliance or something in my sideboard, I think I have a good shot against those decks because I'm playing so much removal and counterspells that are just flexible answers to a lot of different types of random decks that I might just run into.
And there's some versatility probably out of the sideboard. I mean, this deck is playing Negate, which I love, and Disdainful. Like, it's playing a lot of different weird counterspells, so, like, having some burn plans that can come in.
This Breach list definitely went on the sideboarding strategy of have a lot of versatile answers that you want to bring in against a lot of decks rather than, like, you know, really targeted stuff like Land of Sanctity or Stony Silence.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is like a versatile. Like, there's like five different counterspells, Engineer Explosives, a Braid, Blessed Alliance, Celestial Purge. These are all cards that read, this is good against 10 things, but it's not going to wreck anyone versus something like Leyline or Rest in Peace or Stony Silence, which is like, if I cast this, I win these two matchups. But
so
otherwise,
I am thinking somewhere in the 75 to because I don't just want to fold to Tron, especially if I'm playing the Geist of St. Traff version, which I think is a little bit softer to it than the Breach version probably. I was thinking of playing some amount of Spreading Seas in the 75 in order to, you know, be able to Spreading Seas some Tron players.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Seems sweet. I mean, I think that's like a search for Azkaban. Like, the interesting thing in looking at this is I get why search is there, but it's like the one card that seems vaguely replaceable, which maybe just not having played with it. But, like, there's a one of Electrolyze in the main deck. There's two Remands, two Mana Leaks, but I think you want some amount of counter magic. Maybe Mana Leak is just bad.
I'm not a big fan of Mana Leak in general. This person just top-aided a GP and I didn't, so I can't just definitively say it's a bad card. But having played a bunch of Control in my life, I have generally not been a fan of Mana Leak because it's great on turn up until like turn five, and then it becomes really bad.
And my guess is
in these decks, you're looking to play past turn five for sure.
Yeah.
So there's a large portion of each game where you're not going to be having that card be relevant.
So I'd either replace the two Mana Leaks with four Remands, or maybe the Mana Leaks are what become the two Lightning Bolts that I think this deck I would replace it with, so that I can have the burn Snapcaster plan as a backup plan.
Yeah.
That's maybe what I'd look to do. But yeah, I agree with you. I really like this list. It's really, really, really sweet. And it's basically Snapcast, or it's basically Splinter Twin. Angle of it is really appealing to it to me. And otherwise, I would say Affinity is the way I would go. I think those are the two choices I make. Or Merfolk. Yeah, one of those three. Just like Merfolk turns, it has the land destruction.
Merfolk's also a little friendlier on a budget if you're just looking to put something together quickly to get to a GP and not worry about, you know, building a deck that you want to hold on to.
Right. Merfolk will be very inexpensive at the time of this coming out because we will have had Rivals of Ixalan spoilers come out, so everyone will be like, oh, these cards that we already know, some of them are out, and hopefully Cursecatcher is in the set. If Cursecatcher isn't in Rivals, I'm going to be specifically unhappy.
Yeah,
I already bought mine. Like,
Standard needs it.
From a financial perspective, I don't want it to be cheaper, but from a, like, why? Like, Silver Gill Adept makes less sense to me than Cursecatcher being reprinted.
Yeah, and it's in for sure.
Yeah. all right, so that's it for the episode, unless we have anything else, Ben.
No, I think that pretty much does it.
All right, sweet. So to make sure, I want to thank everyone for listening this year. It's been really exciting. We got the thank Wizards for the preview cards we're getting every season. We got to preview some awesome cards from Aven Mind Sensor to Spell Pierce to Path and Inquisition of Kozlek and Modern Masters to Fame, Claim to Fame, and more important, we did Spell Pierce.
Got it.
Yep. Mike asked if we did Opt. We did Spell Pierce.
Oh, no, that was Clarion Community College. Yes. I remember we discussed that.
Okay. The big one for us, and the one that we're most thankful is we did Fatal Push.
It was a huge one.
That's right. Yeah. I knew there was a big one.
And stay tuned for
it was the first episode of the year this year was Fatal Push.
Way to start the year.
And stay tuned because we have a cool one coming up.
Yep.
Definitely cool.
The first episode, literally the next episode after listening this, will be us previewing the next one.
Exactly.
I can actually imagine us doing, yeah, okay. I know. I think I know what that episode will be. We can't tell you because it gives away what the card is, but get hyped. It's exciting. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. I'm at the MMCast and at Kes Wiley specifically for me.
I'm Ben Bateman Media. You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
I don't use Facebook. I don't use Twitter. If you really want to talk to me, you can find me on the Masters of Modern Facebook group. which is, it's good.
It's on Facebook, yeah. The official Mash and Modern Facebook group. There's a page and a group. Follow both. The group is the one that's more exciting. Great discussions are happening there. Also, the game that me and Mike made together for the Kesco company called Super Party Battle is available at thinkgeek.com. If you go to collective.company and see the episode page for this episode, it'll be there in the description. Click on that link, buy it, then go to Board Game Geek, write a great review. In fact, if you just write a great review, just because you like us, we'd appreciate it, but you really should play the game first.
Yeah, it's a great game.
It's really fun. And make sure to check out the Command Zone. They're the best.
Yep.
Are you paying attention? Well, are you doing a me?
No, so this Oprah Winfrey just tweeted, this is going to be dead information, but I guess she just tweeted 20 minutes ago that the first 100,000 people to follow Oprah Own Christmas on Instagram, she's giving $5,000 to as a Christmas gift. Get out your phones and follow it immediately. I don't know if it's real, but if it is, I just was trying to track it in.
How many? The first how many?
100,000. She has 21. There's only 21,000 followers as of this moment.
Okay, well, this is dead news. Yeah. Yeah, so thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you guys next year.
Yeah, guys.
Bye.
Happy 2018.
2018, woo! Happy New Year.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.